I have to struggle to keep myself from laughing at the intros to the show. Oh, damn, it's completely...
Yeah, I'm laughing, but I'm internalising at the moment.
My very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, today, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, by the way, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. There's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And Tim Lynch is a talk radio show host from Green Planet FM here in Auckland, and he's come on to have a wee conversation, a bit of a catch up, because we haven't spoken in some time, have we, Tim?
We haven't, Vinny, and I'm kia ora, and hello world, hello America, hello people on the planet who are wanting to instigate change that's going to make sure that our children and our grandchildren have a life in which to enjoy and expect. So thank you very much, Vinny, for inviting me to be with you and your audience today.
Well, let's go on to what kind of a world we want to leave our children and grandchildren then, because I remember I was speaking with some Māori elders down at the Temple of the Four Winds in Te Kawhiti. I was the first journalist in New Zealand to ever be invited down there. And the elders said that they weren't doing it for themselves, they weren't doing it for their kids, they weren't even doing it for their grandchildren. They're only doing it to try and, you know, save the world for those that are yet to be born, those who don't have a choice in the matter yet.
Yes, well, there's a lot of depth in Indigenous thinking. We need to look at how the American Indians up towards the Iroquois Nation, they looked seven generations ahead to make sure that there was enough salmon, there was enough deer, and that the maize or the corn was available. And so in New Zealand too, New Zealand Māori have a very distinct way of looking at life, solely because New Zealand was invaded by the white man, being the British, way back. Started off in 1642 with a Dutchman, Abel Tasman, but he only had a very brisk encounter. Lives were lost. And so he went away, and it wasn't until Captain Cook came back in 1769 to find that this country, which is a beautiful, pristine country, was inhabited by Maori. And today we have a situation where the Maori are still having to struggle in a white man's country. I mean, we've been very fortunate in the fact that the Europeans who came here weren't quite so hungry and devastating in their wanting to take over the country, but Maoris have still been in many ways marginalised. There are some that are doing quite well, but a good majority aren't. And they have a different look at things, to the degree that the science at the moment, the Western science, is begrudgingly and with teeth gritted recognising that our planet is a superorganism, that is a living supersystem. And the Maori and most Indigenous peoples have been saying for the last few hundred years, hey, white man, what have we been trying to tell you all this time? That we are in and on a living supersystem, and all that the white man is actually doing is extracting everything from it, extracting oil, extracting gas, iron ore, uranium, you name it. And we in New Zealand, we use cows to do the mining. And what we do is we grow grass, and the cows come along and they eat the grass. Well, the grass is composed of minerals. And so essentially the cow then is doing the mining on behalf of man, and we take either the milk or we take either the meat. So we are in a situation where Maori have a very interesting feel for a country, and they call Mother Earth Papatūānuku. And what's happening is that we are not being very good stewards at all. In actual fact, if we had to have if New Zealanders all sort of followed the consumer patterns of the United States of America, we would need something like about one and a half planets, maybe two planets, to sustain ourselves. So we've run out a lot of resources. And we have to realise that we all share the same breath, Vinny. We share the same water system. And this planet gives us a free food chain, which certain biotech companies, Monsanto comes to mind, have basically wanted to lock down the DNA and the genome, etc. So we are on the back foot at one level, but we're always working towards the front foot. And I see this with you, Vinny. You're out there all the time endeavouring to shake the system down and encourage people. And so you are at a place called the Temple of the Four Winds. And the Temple of the Four Winds is in the North Island called Te Ika o Maui. And it is on a ley line. And this particular ley line goes supposedly underneath the ocean all the way to Easter Island and connects up there. And on the other side, it goes all the way to Uluru in Australia. So the Temple of the Four Winds is a very, very special place. And so I congratulate you for being asked to go and share time with Maori, because we need everybody on board to make sure that we take care of our besieged planet Mother Earth, or Gaia, as the ancient Greeks called her. And the interesting thing is that 2,500 years ago, the ancient Greeks basically embedded the idea that everything was alive. And they noticed that the wolves and the bears and the cows and the horses and the dogs and cats, all the mothers gave babies and had babies. And so they thought, if nature is giving birth to everything and every human being is born of a mother, then they must live on Mother Earth. And if you go to Delphi, which you may have heard the Oracle of Delphi, they, on the wall, there is a placard that states that Delphi is the navel or the belly button of Mother Earth. And so we find that the ancient Greeks recognized something greater. But today, man has locked himself up in his head. He's disconnected from his heart, disconnected from his breathing, because we all share the same invisible breath. This is real powerful stuff, Vinny, that we share this same breath to the degree that if we don't have it within 1 minute, all 7.4 billion people will be lying down on the ground at the moment, gasping. And yet, what is this invisibility that keeps us alive? So we are working diligently here in New Zealand to make sure that we have a future for our children, and, you know, bless the Maoris for even going one step further, saying for those who have yet to come into existence.
Well, there's a couple of points I wanted to raise here. Number one is the issue of conservation, because I was at a meeting this one time, I think it was at the Unite Union, and one of the guys was was the head of like a Maori trust, and he and his tribe were tasked with protecting and conserving New Zealand rivers, right? They'd been given like about 1,000 rivers to take. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about that. We've been having some technical difficulties with the network lately. Okay. All right. We're back. And I had a few points to make that I had in here. So anyway, I was at this meeting, and this Māori guy came up, and his tribe had been in charge of keeping 1,000 rivers clean, right? Now, the government were in charge of keeping about 33,000 rivers clean, or something like that. Or it might have been 3,000 rivers. I forget which was happening here. But anyway, 100% of the government-protected rivers you can't swim in, and 100% of the Māori-protected rivers you can. So I thought to myself, this is kind of like some people have a natural tendency or a cultural heritage, or there are simply older, more tried and true and tested techniques that understand the land and the natural systems better than we do. And I'm reminded of you're saying about when the white man came, and it reminded me of what Chief Sitting Bull said. He's what did he When the white men came, our culture was pretty simple. The women would take care of the children all day while the men went fishing with their friends, and then they would come back, have nice fresh food, make love to the women all night, and then repeat the process. Only the white man is stupid enough to think he can improve on this.
Yeah, well, this is what's going on, is that the white man has complicated everything, because the whole thing is that he's wanted to have possession of everything. He needed to fence something off. He needed to put a wall around it. He needed to put a lock on a door. And Indigenous peoples didn't understand that.
I think that's because Indigenous peoples got rid of psychopaths before they became powerful and got in control of their entire societies and became empires.
Oh, yes, yes.
So it's not the white man, is it? It's the psychopath man.
Well, we've allowed that situation to come into being. I want to go back a wee bit, Vinny. We have a river in New Zealand called the Whanganui. People can go and look at that on Wikipedia, Whanganui, Whanganui. This is the first river in the world or on this planet that has actually got a status as a living entity. There are no other rivers that has actually got that. We have specifically passed some legislation that sees the Whanganui as a living facet or a living entity. And so we've got to make sure that we see all rivers as living entity on the planetary body of Mother Earth, because that day will mean that all water would become clean, and all corporates and anybody else who are polluting and putting sewage and God knows what else into that river will be stopped and prosecuted. Because essentially, our planet as a living being, if we take, for example, the metaphor of the African and Amazonian jungles, they act as the lungs exchanging oxygen, and the atmosphere right around the planet is the respiratory system. And the lakes on Earth, they are, and the rivers all work together to flush out the system, the body, and all the oceans in the world are like the blood system. And the interesting thing is that the oceans are something like about 3.5% salt, and the human body is 3.5% salt. So there are so many different similarities. If you noticed that the Stonehenge in England, pyramids of Cheops, and many of the cathedrals throughout Europe, and if you go back down into Teotihuacan in Mexico and down to into Tiwanaku in Bolivia, these places are sitting on ley lines, and these ley lines are exactly the same as the nodal points that you have in your acupuncture meridians for your human body. So there's an old saying, as above, so below. Well, our planet has got so many wonderful things happening that we can actually see in our own being. So we have to realize that this planet has loaned us bodies. I think this is a real important thing to acknowledge. She loans us bodies. How does she do that? Well, I mean, the fact that I'm made of minerals, I'm made of water, and I'm made of air. And where did I get it from? I got it from the planet. And the other thing is, we might turn around and say, soul, do we have a soul? And it's really interesting, because the Latin word for soul is sun. And so the sun shines out of the system, and we, this planet is made of the trilogy of air, water, and earth. But there is a quality of soul. And in the Bible, Genesis, it's 2.7. It mentions that God took the dust of the soil and molded into a body, and then breathed into its nostril the breath of life, and we became a living soul. So when we look at what the American Indians were talking about, we realize too that white men steamrolled all of their sacred knowledge. And here we are today, the human race is definitely racing to something, and we don't know what it is, That doesn't look very promising, does it?
It looks like they're racing towards a one-world fascist government, governed by corporations, which basically own everything and everyone and determine what everybody does on any given day of the week.
And lock them all down!
You know, sounds like a fantasy to me. But the great thing about conspiracy is that a whole lot of films get made about these real things that happen. These real plans and schemes.
I agree. I mean, let's look at the TPPA, the Trans-Pacific Privatization Agreement, that's been locked down over sort of the Pacific Basin, if they think they can get away with it. Now, it's essentially, as we know, a corporate agenda. And I interviewed a guy called Brian Gould, who used to be the deputy leader of a British opposition, the Labour Party in England. And he's actually against the TPPA, which is really, really good. It's good to have an honest politician or a politician who's prepared to come out on the people's side. And I said to him, there's a farm crowd called Crayfar Farms in the lower North Island. And I said, if you got 20 farms all together and made an area of about 10, 15 square kilometres, and you are a foreign country, now any person overseas can come to New Zealand and buy land. So that means Americans, Chinese, Japanese, anybody could buy a whole lot of land. And once they bought the land, what's the stop of them putting an airport in there and then flying direct from their country through Fiji, because Fiji has gone sort of quite independent and quite rogue. And so it's got fuel there so that they could refuel in Fiji, fly to New Zealand, do whatever they wanted to do in New Zealand, even have a military base for all I know. And then because they've got enough fuel on the aircraft to fly back to Fiji and then fuel up and fly wherever they wish to go. And he was actually stunned by that because he thought, gee, there's that possibility. So we have to have a look at how New Zealanders are being outthought time and time again.
The way I look at it, that's not very difficult. I mean, what are we taught in schools, you know? Obey authority, you know, believe in the establishment. What are we taught at university? Obey rules and believe in the establishment. What happens to you every time you don't do that? You get ostracized, you get called crazy, and you become, quote-unquote, politically irrelevant, or at least demonized as such. What's interesting, though, and you remember that TPPA protest we went to when there were, like, over 10,000 people there, way over, maybe 15,000, I don't know. That's what Penny Bright reckons, and she's counted enough protests to know. But
yes,
even in the rain, even in the cold, even though it was People's Saturday, there were still that many people that turned up. And I think that the people who organised that process and people like Jane Kelsey, etc., have all contributed so massively to those turnouts, which I'm not sure whether or not they realise it, and they probably do, but it emboldens everybody who sees or hears about that protest or goes to it, right? And that's, I feel, what the whole point of protesting is. It's not actually to achieve a particular goal. It's only to show and to cause a ripple.
Agreed. I agreed. Now, the interesting thing was that they never showed a bird's eye view of the crowd. And I maintain that we need to have our own drones, Vinny, so that we can start at the top of Queen Street and go all the way along and photograph this gigantic line, because it was nearly half a kilometre in length. And the press in this country showed a few ground shots. They didn't want to show just how extensive this was. And so we got to get smart. We also have to have somebody positioned high up in a building that overlooks the street so that they can photograph it from there, to get the message out. So that will really embolden Kiwis, New Zealanders.
I absolutely think so, because it's imagery that people can't argue with, right? However, there were some shots of the Christchurch protest which were taken from such angles, but there were 2,000-3,000 people that turned out, and I was like, in Christchurch? When it's like 2 degrees out and it's raining?
And oh, they're like, getting over drama of a earthquake or many earthquakes, and that's another story in itself too. Yeah.
And I found during the protests that the angrier chants were the ones that got the most responses. Now I wonder why this is. Why is anger so energizing to people?
Well, I think they're so closed down and so frustrated, and they've been boiling over and they've been internalizing it. And once they get an outlet for it, then it explodes. The interesting thing was I was talking to a policeman a couple of days afterwards. I asked him about the TPPA, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. He said, I don't know anything about it. And I said, oh, well, you need to. I says, I was up Queen Street. I've been up Queen Street on about 4 TPPA rallies in the last 2.5-3 years. And I said, because what happens if this gets signed up, the New Zealand police will become privatised. And then you're going to become militarised. And you have a family, you've got children. And do you honestly want to be in a situation there where you're part of a military police that's controlling the country that you grew up in, where we have had a lot of freedom? This country used to be a really, really good country for heaps of freedoms. But now you have to have, you know, helmets for skateboarding virtually, and helmets when you're on a bike. In America, they still don't have crash helmets, I think, on motorbikes, which I think is a little risky. But New Zealand is very much a country where we've got laws for everything now. And I think people are just getting so fed up that they want an outlet to come and vent. And the TPPA is one of them. But I also said to him, when I went down Queen Street, the police actually enjoyed it as well, because they read all the different, quite funny, quite hilarious signs telling us what the TPPA is. My one was, because I was born in Matamata, which is where Middle Earth is, and the Hobbit film was started off in Matamata, so I identified myself as a Hobbit. And I had on my large placard, the Eye of Mordor is upon you. And anybody who understands the Lord of the Rings will understand that this all-seeing eye, the same one that you see on top of the dollar bill pyramid, is looking out over the land mass, to keep an eye on you. So I had the Eye of Mordor is upon you.
The great eyes sees all. His gaze pierces cloud and wall and flesh.
Yes, yes, too right. So anyway, that was my one. And the other one too, on the other side of the placard that I had, was that where is the research on rats eating GMO or GE food such as maize, rice, soy and wheat? And the next statement was, there's no research done on them. And there's no research on 20 years. There's no research done on 10 years. And there's no research done on 5 years, because the rats never make it. And unfortunately, our American brothers and sisters and kin, if they're eating GE food up there, in 3 generations, you will find that your children are going to be mutants. And it's very, very important for Americans to come together and, one, ask, where is the research on 5 generations of rats eating GE food? And just give them 4 choices, because rats can live on soy, wheat, and rice, and maize. So give them that and water and see what happens.
Well, it's specifically if you ask them to give you the 5-generation trials, because obviously there aren't any, because by generation 3, every subsequent generation is born sterile. So that means there literally can't be a generation after that. So if you have a look at this and you think of GMOs in the global food chain, are we required to label them? No. Is there anything that to warn anybody about it? Is there any stuff that's widely publicized that isn't played down in the mainstream media or counteracted by vicious propaganda? No. Sorry. Just keep eating it. Just keep eating it. Don't ask for a label. Look, just because we specifically make bazillions of dollars off of making this stuff for you doesn't mean we want you to know what it is, okay? Okay, and then the other part of it is the giant tumours. Now, at the very least, you will grow a potato-shaped tumour on your body if you eat too much of this GMO food, all right? Thereby solving the hunger crisis, okay? You're going to be sweet-ass, bro. I saw the things, the dude wearing gloves holding the rat, and the tumours are almost as big as the rat. Like, really?
I've seen them. Horrible. Horrible. And yet, for some unknown reason, we cannot get the business people in New Zealand behind this one. They all pull their head right in. And the academics, well, the academics, I don't even want to talk about them.
I went to a skeptic society, not skeptic society, but a little thing, meet up at a bar for skeptics, you know, and there was this young chick fresh out of university saying how great GMOs are good, you know, and everything like that, and her portion on, what are the potential risks? And they go, oh, well, there might be a little bit of a risk of crop failure here or there or something like that, and just plays it down. It's like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And here's the thing about skeptics that I've found, Tim. Is they don't equally apply their skepticism. If it's establishment doctrine, they will believe it lock, stock, and sphincter. And if it's not, on the other hand, if it's somebody like on, I don't know, like just a person with a camera going into a place, or like these little small funded studies and things like that with giant tumors on rats or anything, that's just crazy. It's conspiratorial. Oh, God. How dare you question my beliefs?
That's right. Yeah, well, we've got, fortunately, we're still able to keep these GE products out of New Zealand, but boy, they're wanting to sneak them in, and there are certain operatives who will put stuff in, you know, will put wheat, contaminated wheat in with ordinary wheat, and New Zealand's biosecurity is not really up to checking out every shipment that comes in of any sort of primary product, and that's one hell of a state for us to get into. So we've got to keep alert all the time. Yeah, Vinny, I mean, talk about having to get off the back foot and get onto the front foot and start pushing ahead and pushing back. There's some interesting things. I've been looking at what's happening in the Middle East, and I see all the ISIS with all these Toyotas. And they're brand new Toyotas, and they've got all their, you know, guns on the back, etc. And they're driving around causing huge mayhem. Where are they getting these Toyotas from? They're coming in from on a ship somewhere, and there's many of them, and they're the latest ones, and somebody is being paid. Can we not follow the money?
No, of course not, because power and money don't corrupt people. I mean, what are you, a conspiracy theorist?
Yeah.
Oh my God. See, this is the thing that they've only got ridicule to fall back on, and that's, I think, the source of the frustration, and I believe that that's why when people hear anger expressed about this kind of scumbaggery, about this kind of deception, it strikes a chord with them on a very deep level, because it does give them that release. Because for the first time in perhaps a long time, somebody is actually expressing something that they're thinking, that they're feeling, instead of just played down BS that's had all of the beautiful stuff taken out of it. Like, for example, if you listen to this radio show, it's kind of like raw cow's milk. It's got all the raw elements in there, all of the stuff that's naturally in it. But if you listen to the news or mainstream talk radio, it's like homogenized milk that's had everything good boiled out of it.
Well, that's it, you see, because New Zealanders, we are the best program for many different corporations to try their products on. And TV1 and TV3 in New Zealand, that's where New Zealanders at home at 6 o'clock watching the news at night, they form their opinions on those stations, the TV stations. And that's it. You can say anything. But boy, you won't get it. Now, Vinny, you were at the Moment of Truth, .com's function. Was it last year?
I didn't go to that one.
Didn't you? This is where Glenn Greenwald and Snowden...
I was watching the live stream and filming it as well and uploaded it to my YouTube channel for people to see directly after it. Because I wasn't allowed to bring my cameras in there. I wasn't allowed to bring my banners. I wasn't allowed to do anything. So I was like,
Who banned you?
No. I think it might have been Bomber Bradbury. To be honest, bro, he's there was this time. Yeah. I think it was the last GCSB bill meeting just before that Moment of Truth one. I brought a couple of my John Key Not Wanted banners and. I got on the microphone maybe a bit too much. I don't know. Maybe I just kind of irritated them a bit. And so next one I went to was the GCSB at the town hall. And then there was this rule, no banners allowed inside. And I was like, there was nobody else at the other GCSB thing that had banners except for me. So that was done there just for me. That's what I felt. And then when the Kim.com see one, it says no banners and no cameras. And I was like... They want total control. They want all the hits for themselves. They don't actually care if there's different versions out there or whatever. And I watched the version live, and it was so poorly directed, so amateurishly cut that half the time I was sitting there being frustrated that they have a full shot of Julian Assange, who's not saying anything, while one of the other commentators is actually speaking their bit and saying something really important. It's like, you're supposed to cut back to camera A at that point, bro. It's just kind of like the control freak director in me came out, and I think it was just professional jealousy maybe that they got the gig and I didn't.
I see. Well, look, I'll tell you what. Now, we had Assange, we had Snowden, we had Greenwood, we had that other guy, Anderson, a pretty slick speaker from Canada who was .com's lawyer, but they missed the major story in that. Did you realize that they missed the major story? Well, the major story was John Campbell. Now, John Campbell, sometime in May last year, did a half-hour program that stated that back in 2012, an American transport plane landed in Wellington Airport, a big grey unit, and it was there for a number of days. Anyway, some young photo-crazed guy wanted to photograph American military aircraft because he likes photographing planes. So he went down, and he photographed that plane and then blew up the pictures. And when he blew up the pictures, he could see people getting on board. And one of them who was getting on board was none other than James Clapper, the head of the NSA, who had been in New Zealand secretly with our Prime Minister and all the other spooks in New Zealand. And he was skipping out of the country silently on this big, huge, grey American transporter. And if it wasn't for that photographer taking that photo, blowing it up, and taking it to John Campbell of Campbell Live, and for listeners to know, Campbell has been kicked out. He's been kicked off TV because he's a truth teller or the best we've got. And so that was not brought up at the Moment of Truth. Now, that would have tied in a lot more things, wouldn't it?
It would, and I made a meme to that effect, and it reads as thus, why is Campbell Live being cancelled? It's not that complicated. Now, in the first panel, we have John Campbell asking the Prime Minister, John Key, are you saying the Law Society and the Privacy Commissioner and the Human Rights Commissioner are all wrong? And John Key says, yes. And that's over the GCSB, right? And then the next panel is MediaWorks' new CEO, Mark Weldon, wants to cancel Campbell Live. And Mark Weldon is a good friend of John Key. and he's right there sitting directly behind him as he's accepting the new CEO position. And then the last one, John Key's communication minister and former MediaWorks CEO, the largest private media company in New Zealand, by the way, Stephen Joyce, bailed out MediaWorks $40 million because they couldn't afford their broadcast licensing fees. And ever since, Key has enjoyed a relatively smooth ride from their reporters, radio hosts and propaganda machine, including the height of the 2011 election being given a whole hour of talk radio for free, called the Prime Minister's Hour, on the proviso that the current elected Prime Minister radio host can't talk about politics.
People, listeners and Americans have to realise that, regrettably, the disease that's afflicted so many countries now, particularly in the so-called democratic free West, has now permeated New Zealand. We too are having to deal with a situation where we have people who are manipulating 24/7. So, yep, I agree, because TV3 has just basically endorses the status quo.
This is the problem with the media in this country, and I've just received word from my producer, Christine Van Wyk, that the second episode of Paradigm, my television show, will be getting aired on Monday. So that's going to be good. And we had an interview with Penny Bright and Bruce Rogan. Now, Penny Bright's a long-time activist. She's run for mayor a couple of times of Auckland. She's filing a one-woman's rights revolt against Auckland City. And Bruce Rogan is the head of the Mangawhai Residents and Ratepayers Association, who've been exposing a lot of corruption out there. Now, there's a recent video that I put up of Bruce Rogan speaking at the Auckland Rates Revolt protests a number of weeks back. And the list of names and responses that he read out of people in official positions, positions of authority, people who are supposed to expose corruption or supposed to support people, etc., you know, whether they be politicians, whether they be the police, the courts, the local councils, it doesn't matter. Ombudsman, Auditor General, doesn't matter. None of them will investigate any corruption, all right? And all of them have got an excuse. And one of the people who was the lead investigator on his case was from Scotland Yard. And he said, out of all the countries he's worked in his life, New Zealand is by far the most corrupt. And the only reason why it's by far the most corrupt is because people don't realise how corrupt it is, because it's so corrupt that the people who are supposed to expose and punish corruption are corrupt.
I hear what you're saying. The Time magazine has to really have a look at the fact that they've put on time and time again, that New Zealand was the least corrupt country on earth. Holy heck. I'll give you a situation. I used to fly as crew for Air New Zealand. I used to work up in first class. And the round table, the business round table, that was very strong back in the 1980s. They're the ones who virtually convinced the government to sell most of New Zealand's assets to a lot of their friends. A lot of the business round table were on flights over to Sydney, and there were 16 seats in first class, and you'd go round and feed them. You'd give them drinks and food, and they'd have, I don't know, huge, about, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 courses of food, and they'd be all, afterwards they'd stand up and walk around and talk to each other. And by that time, that flight was outside New Zealand's territorial waters. So if they are in international waters or outside New Zealand's legal jurisdiction, what's to stop them from doing insider trading? You see, I mean, holy gee, we really, really, New Zealanders are asleep at the wheel, and I'm very, very concerned that we will need a major shock to wake us up, and I don't want to even envision what that major shock may be.
Yeah, maybe we could do some kind of truth or false flag, you know, dress up like militarized police and beat the heads into some protesters or something, and all the country just goes, oh my God, our police are tyrannical and stuff like that. We need an investigation. We need more freedoms and stuff like that. And I go, well, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? A place where police action and incompetence and something like that actually resulted in people getting more freedoms as opposed to more of them taken off them. How ironic. I'm just joking, by the way. But every time I see successful law change, it's also because the people who are changing the law have staged some kind of BS crisis. Right? They stage the crisis. When people react to it and they get freaked out, they go, save us! Save me, jeepers! And then they go, oh, well, seeing as you just need to be saved here, darling, we've got the perfect solution for you. And it involves you paying a lot more rates, a lot more tax, having no say in what the hell the government does, and we're going to surveil absolutely everything you do your entire life. All right, and we're just going to put it on some gigantic data banks that are so big that they cause brownouts around the country on a regular basis. But it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, this is what is coming down the pike. And New Zealanders, like Australians, the Aussies are the same. They're having huge, huge challenges with their particular Prime Minister and the fact that it's basically the aircraft carrier for the US and this particular region of the world. But we have to actually find, why are we disconnected? And I'm wanting to talk about connection. You see, lots of people are at the moment in survival mode. They're just scraping through the day. But in actual fact, inside us is all this potential and possibility. And you'll like this, Vinny, because we are an energy field. I'm a subatomic energy field. And I oscillate at a particular frequency, and we all oscillate at a particular frequency. And the universe oscillates at a particular frequency. And so we're energy fields in a universal energy field. And what we need to recognize that when any baby that is born into this realm, as soon as it takes its first breath and comes into this realm, it is an energy bundle of exponential potential. That's what a baby is. And you know that as soon as it starts breathing and taking its mother's milk, the cells are dividing and dividing and dividing. There are huge amounts of growth at that because it's exponentially growing. And what we do is, in many cases, we tell our children everywhere, oh, shut up, keep quiet, stop talking, get out of my sight. There are all these put-downs of a child. And a child, by the time is 4 years of age, most probably has heard something like 750 definitions of no and only maybe about 7 to 15 definitions of yes. And we've got to find a way in which to encourage them to still do things, but and if they do something bad, say, hey, look, you can do it this way and you can burn yourself, but try this other way. Give them an option. Don't say no, 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 because they come lockdowns. And the media does the same thing. This is why we get terrorized by the daily news all the time. It's all subtly locking us down. You go to TV in New Zealand and you see the news, and it'll start off possibly with a court case or a murder or a terrorist attack, and you'll see your vibrations going down, 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 as they keep moving to the courts, and they keep looking at something there that's a life is lost or a assault and battery or God knows what else. And then finally they get to the news, get to the sport, and oh, breathe a sigh of relief, the sport. Oh, God, yeah, we can do sport. And so they meander along on sport. They get to the weather forecast. They've got no idea what's going on the weather forecast. New Zealand weather forecasters would be the worst in the world, particularly as we're a small sort of marine country with oceans right around it that we get affected so easily. Anyway, after telling us that the weather's going to be good, bad or indifferent, and they're always wrong virtually, they move to the end where they put on a warm fuzzy. And this warm fuzzy lifts you up, but it's nowhere near as high as you were prior to listening to the news. And this is how the sociopaths in the news departments and radio and TV and even now in the newspapers are manipulating our minds.
I just get so sick of it, man. You know,
I know.
I mean, look, I'm trying to do this like back in the day. I think Mary Byrne from the Fluoride Action Network, she said to me that I needed to do a half hour daily show that's up on YouTube or whatever at 6 o'clock, so she can come home and have her tea in front of the thing and get some news for the day. And I thought, well, man, I mean, think about the production value and all the expense that goes into that. Like, I managed to swing two free episodes down at Face TV, but if they weren't free, they would have been costing between $750 and $2,000 per episode, right?
Yes.
Now, that's insane amount of money. I can't even live off that. That's more than I live off in a month per episode, and it doesn't make any sense to me. Because of the expense involved and I think this is why broadcast television is really struggling, because you can't come up with money like that for something that barely anybody's going to watch, let alone start new shows and things of this nature. This is why Media Works needed to be bailed out $40 million and didn't give one share in their company to the government, because they couldn't afford to. And here's the thing, it's a paper tiger. This is the reason, I think, why people find it so frustrating, is because they don't realise that the media have very, very little audience by comparison to what you'd think they were. Because a lot of the audience suspect them as being completely BS, right? You look at any time that there's an article up there about something we talk about on this show, for example, and you will see the comment sections of that article in the mainstream news flooded with a narrative that is contrary to what the mainstream news is trying to get people to think with that article. So naturally, they shut down the comment sections.
They always do that. They always do that. I'll see something interesting. I think, oh gosh, I'd like to put a comment there, but they always lock that out. The interesting thing is that the TPPA, the Trans-Pacific Privatisation Agreement, when the New Zealand Herald does something on it, boy, do people jump on it, and 90% of people are hammering the government and are hammering the Herald because they know we're going to lose our sovereignty, we're going to lose our freedom. And so there are one or two little places where you can get the story across, but the New Zealand Herald, sneaky people. They will say that, oh, look, we've done a run. We've done 276,000 was our run, printing run for a particular day, most probably a weekend. But I've also been working in a situation where we used to sell these at a shop. We used to get newspapers at the shop, and you'd get a pile, maybe 20 or 30 newspapers. You would only sell about five. Or nine, you might sell a lot more on, say, on a Saturday, but then what you do is you just cut off a header that says New Zealand Herald, and then you use the paper for, you either recycle it or use it for mulch or whatever, or wrapping fish and chips in. You return the header to the New Zealand Herald, and in actual fact, you find out that most probably a 30% of those New Zealand Heralds may not have been read, but they say, we did the big print run. Here's the lie. You know what I'm saying? They pump up the idea that they're successful having this gigantic print run, but in actual fact, it's only a print run. It's not who actually reads it. And so these are the twists and turns that we live in this wonderful country that is losing its mana. New Zealand was once a moral compass for the world. And we were the first country to give women the vote. Now, this is an interesting one, Vinny, because this was back in 1893, and I know there'll be lots of people, particularly hard-minded male patriarchs, will choke when I say this, but this was a time in 1893 when the divine feminine anchored the opportunity for a woman to have the vote. In 1893, New Zealand was the first country to allow women to vote and have a say in their life. And this is the divine yin coming down to finally connect with the divine yang. The only unfortunate thing is there that materialism and fame and glamour and celebrity and all that sort of thing has weaseled its ways in to the collective consciousness of New Zealanders, men and women, and we're like, in many cases, a microcosm of the United States, except we don't have quite so many guns.
Well, we have quite a lot of guns per capita. I think Canada and New Zealand are right up there along with gun possession, just alongside the United States. But we don't have quite so many handguns and assault rifles and things like that here anyway. And we also we're not exactly home to all the weapons manufacturers that are owned by the criminal bankers that own our government. You know, I mean, criminal bankers own our government, sure, but the weapons manufacturers don't have a home here. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. .com, ladies and gentlemen. Be sure to listen into American Freedom Radio 4 days a week for the live broadcast. Back in just a second.
We're on air.
Oh my Hooray. God. Sorry about that, guys. Took a lot longer to grab a coffee than I thought. All right, well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 4 days a week. That's Monday through Thursday in the United States and Tuesday through Friday in New Zealand. And my very special guest joining me for hour two is Tim Lynch from Green Planet FM. And you can check out his interviews there. Now, in this one, I wanted to talk a little about this whole idea of personal responsibility, right? Now, my belief is no man's an island, and great works don't primarily are the responsibility of one person, but they never get accomplished only by one person. Like, for example, even here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, I'm one person, I do the work and stuff like that, but there's many, many different people who support me. Guests come on, donate their time. I've got now people donating their time to edit archives and things for me and do show descriptions for me. Now, it wasn't always that way because I had to do all of the work by myself. But again, I wouldn't have been able to do that without you, the listeners, supporting me with your regular monthly donations through the PayPal and the KiwiBank, which you can find at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And the reason why I ask people to give monthly is because I have proven over nearly a decade that I will consistently be here. I'm not going anywhere. I've been on air heaps. I've brought many, many different guests from a wide spectrum of different disciplines on the show. And frankly, there's no other way to do it, I don't think, but to have independent media funded by individual contributors all over the place. It's not corporatized. It's not full of ads or anything. This is listener-supported radio brought to you by you. Now, isn't that a much better business model? Certainly, it's a lot less indebting than the current broadcast media, wouldn't you think, Tim?
Well, we have to find a way to outsmart the system. And really, at the moment, this is... When people give, it is a sacrifice to the benefit of a good. What you're doing and what we're doing is we're supporting a situation where you, Vinnie, you most probably have got the New Zealand Most Courageous Person Award that hasn't been given to you because you've gone out time and time and time again where nobody really, really wants to go. You go off the edge and you walk a couple of feet beyond the edge, endeavouring to bring people some real hard-hitting information. And I commend you for starting to now pull in and just edit sound bites that are really, really important, where you say, somebody on such and such said this, and this is what they said. And this actually was juxtaposed. It was the opposite to what they had said the day before or a week before, etc. You have now got such a resource, and it needs finance, it needs help. And I mean, I'm the same with Green Planet FM, the tens of thousands of dollars that you just take out of your own pocket and put into it because you feel that you are making a difference. And really, it, you know, it's, it means for somebody to not spend $10 on a bottle of Jack Daniels and say, look, I'm going to go a week without having a drink, and I'm going to donate that to a good cause, is important. But I know that at the moment money is far tighter in America than it's ever been. And I know that a lot of people are struggling there. And yet we, to survive, we need to have cash. I have to work. I have to moonlight. I have to work. I mean, I'm a pensioner, but I still have to work so that I've got money to be able to do what I'm doing at greenplanetfm.com. Okay, greenplanetfm.com. That's the website that I have to run as well. And so I just trust that, Vinny, people see the worth, particularly of your courage, and how you're prepared to go out and not hit balls out of the park, hit balls into orbit. That's what we need.
Well, thank you very much, Tim. I appreciate that. I feel that I'm worthy of some, you know, at least some recognition. One thing that really pisses me off is that I'm the loudest, the most cool looking, and the most hilarious person at a protest in any different day, because I'm covered in technology and I've got all the gears and I'm telling jokes through the megaphone and all of that kind of stuff, and I'm louder than like seven subwoofers just with my own voice, you know. And time and time again I look through media footage of all of the kind of stuff, and just as I start to hear my voice coming around the corner, oh, they cut to the next shot. God damn it. It's like they're trying to purposely keep me out of the limelight or something like that. And there was this one time, though, where I interviewed, I think it was Andrew Williams from the New Zealand First Party, just before he got kicked out of it, or rather quit from it, because they demoted him massively right after this interview.
Yep, okay, yeah. I hear what you're saying.
But the TV3 used some of my footage from that interview, and of course mischaracterized, and of course just basically throw off about 15 minutes of interview that were probably the most important political points that have been discussed in the media of any kind at that point in the election. Was me and Andrew talking very honestly about the media coverage of the election, and specifically its characterization of New Zealand First, which is very indicative of a massive control structure trying to keep them out. And we had a look at some of the reasons why the media don't like New Zealand First and would do this. And the answers he gave me were actually quite interesting, because under New Zealand First, the private media machine wouldn't exist. Like, they're literally a threat to their business as a policy. and so many other things. But again, I think I've been trying as hard as I can to get somewhere in that mainstream media, but what I've refused to do is tone down the message, to tone down the truth, to deliver it in a nonchalant, unemotional, dull, uninteresting manner, where all the things have been watered out and everything that might scare an audience is sort of kept from them. I think somebody said today that fear doesn't exist. And it's just, you've never had your life threatened by a gang member, have you, bro? you've never been busted and have cops putting you in handcuffs, have you? Fear is very real. It's what you do with it that counts. And more to the point, it shouldn't be something that you feel all the time. Because if you're afraid all the time, you feel very tense, and it cuts off all your higher thought function. You can't function properly. And that's what the humour is about. I know I talk about some real serious stuff and then make even worse jokes, but trust me, there's nothing that is worse than the truth. No joke that I tell could be as bad as the truth.
Yeah, well, you're definitely out there more than most, I can assure you. Far, far, far more than most. So, well, look, yes, well, you wanted to talk on personal responsibility, and you see, I want to talk about virtues and values. Once upon a time, we had values you picked up from our parents, and virtues you picked up from sort of your culture. And at the moment, we are finding that no leaders in any country are talking about virtues and values. It's, we want it now and go get it. It means, in many cases, the ends justifies the means, when in actual fact it should be the means justifies the ends. If we do it properly, we will get our just reward. And at the moment now, it's winner take all, and they don't care how they get it. And it's interesting, Vinny, there's a number of men at the moment who are dying here in Auckland, and because of cancer, and they can't handle the horror of 1 minute being bulletproof and next minute lying in the hospital bed dying because things have happened so fast. And they have no concept. When they die, you're dead. That's it, finish. Whereas once upon a time, because the church had such an iron grip of the world, we were all told that we had a soul. And so at least there was an inculcation within us to recognize that we have a soul. And that also religion, no matter what religion, sort of other than Buddhist to a degree, maintained that there was a greater being or a greater over self or intelligence. But these guys anyway are dying, and the reason is they were programmed by the system, and all the doctors and engineers and lawyers and accountants, when they go to university, even though they may not sort of study that particular subject, we're told that the universe is here all by chance. It's just a darn fluke, and it's all running down, and we're going to all die in the big crunch or something like this. There's no soul. There's no God. There's nothing. And so these people have got no hope. So they've got nothing to live for.
The bozo the clown particle.
Well, that's about it.
I got a joke about this, actually, Tim. All right. So everybody knows the Large Hadron Collider. It's CERN, right? $8 billion. Stretched across four different countries, giant tube that they can fire particles through at light speed. And the idea is to try and figure out and recreate the start of the universe by crashing two particles together. And they theorize that it'll create this new kind of matter that'll figure out how the Big Bang actually first happened. So they go, what's the possible consequences to this? Well, it could create a singularity and make a black hole that would suck in and destroy and kill everything on Earth that had ever existed before in life. Ah, fuck it. Well, let's go ahead with it, bro. And so they do this experiment. They crash these two particles together, and they were right. It did create a new type of matter that existed for only a moment and then disappeared and then had no practical benefit. And they called it doesn't matter.
Yeah. very good. Well, it doesn't matter. I just heard today that there's actually a whole group of scientists who have come together, and they're very, very concerned about it. These are physicists, very, very concerned where they're going. It's like as if they've got a self-sabotage loop at this CERN, and essentially what they want to do is that they want to see if they can pull the rug out from underneath them and see what happens. And this is sheer madness. This is nothing. I mean, this is real fast. GMOs and GE are slow-mo suicide. This here is an instantaneous flash out to nowhere land. So it's very important for, again, we've got to rein in all these madmen that are running around on the planet. But, boy, it's very difficult because they've put everybody in a situation where it's just such a struggle to survive. And so the key that I'm involved with is just get to know someone in your neighborhood and get little cells or little clusters of people and start working together. It's a hard one, but you've got to start sharing. And if you can tie in to a local food growing co-op, just in Auckland at the moment, there are 50 new global community growing co-ops, and some parks and some churches have got backyards, and whole lots of people have come together and they're starting to grow food and they're meeting other people. And it was actually started off by the New Zealand Health Department because they wanted to stop so many people from coming in being bloated due to eating all the wrong food and suffering from diabetes and obesity and heart diseases and God knows what else. It was taking such a hit on New Zealand's socialized medicine. Solely because if you're sick in New Zealand, you can go straight to hospital and you'll be taken care of and you don't have to pay a bean.
And this is the medical doctors that are treating you don't know anything about nutrition and won't tell you how to prevent the illness from arising again so that you have to keep coming back when you get sick again.
We have got this embedded in the whole system. You've got to take your own food in there. But in actual fact, they'll spend a lot of money keeping you alive, but at the same time, they'll put food in you that basically is devoid of life force, like white bread and cornflakes and, juices, sugary juices. But anyway, what's happening is that we've got a toxified supply system
is basically what we've come to, right? Completely out of touch with the natural realm. Nothing's natural anymore. I mean, when was the last time somebody like picked an apple off of a tree and then just ate it?
Well, I'm lucky, you see, because I have, not far up the road, I've got a garden that I share with people, and I can pick tonight if I want to go around there. I've got the fridge full at the moment. I can pick 15 green leafy vegetables. Now, what I like about green leafy vegetables is that when I pick them, that 8 minutes prior to that, the photons that were in the leaf now, 8 minutes prior to that, were actually in the sun. And it takes 8 minutes to travel the 100 million miles, to get lodged in the stomata, in the chlorophyll of my plant. And I'm eating solarized food that is light. So when I actually pick this food and take it home and start eating it, and I put it into a big, huge salad, and I'll tell anybody in America, this is a wonderful salad dressing. Get cider vinegar, make sure it's cider vinegar, cold press organic olive oil, that's good, and some honey. If you haven't got beehive collapse happening around you, but you can get some honey. So put honey, cider vinegar, and olive oil together, chop up a bit of garlic, put that in there, make sure there's plenty of honey, and then spread it over your green salad. And you can cut in tomatoes and capsicums, and I grate beetroot. How many people have grated beetroot? This is a very important vegetable, extremely important vegetable. Makes you strong and resilient. And I have all these veggies in the salad. And so that sort of covers a big part of my day. And you can come home. We can still catch some fish out here. And I live in a place where I get given lots of fish, fresh fish, snapper, some of them 6-7 kilos in weight, which is something like about 16-17 pounders, Vinny. We still have them here in this country, and we won't have them for very long because the trawlers are coming in. And if the TPPA is signed, there's nothing to stop American or Japanese or Canadian trawlers from coming down in New Zealand and trawling our waters. And we would say, hey, you're not allowed to do that. We haven't allowed you. You're not allowed to come into our country. And they will say, but you signed the TPPA and you signed away your sovereignty. We are allowed to override anything in your country because you stupid New Zealanders signed it all away.
Actually, they won't, that's not what they'll actually say. What they'll actually say is it was the refugees fishing in the waters that caused it.
Yeah, well, that's another story. Now, I was speaking to my station manager yesterday, and she said to me, she said, you know what, in certain areas in Syria, they've had 157 degrees of heat. There's been a sort of a stationary heat sink over that, a little bit over Iran and a little bit into sort of Kurdistan, where the Turks are. And a lot of the refugees come from that area. And she said that they are what she would call escaping from the effects of climate change and global warming. And I thought to myself, whew, that's interesting for a station manager to say. And she said, yeah, a lot of them are from the land and they've escaped that way. And she said, another thing is that for some unknown reason, the Europeans are quite happy to take people who come from Iran and or Syria in this case because they don't look black. She said, lots of boats from North Africa have been tossed over and turned over and drowned people have come up on the beach and they all had bodies of Africans. And nobody said, and Europe said, oh, we'll open our homes to the Africans. We're prepared to open some our homes, evidently, to somebody who doesn't look quite African. So there's a racial challenge around that one. And nobody's acknowledging that one either. So there, I mean, God, all this crap is coming to the surface, isn't it?
Well, the way I look at it, with the TPPA going on the way it is, and basically, it means that corporations will control our immigration policy anyway. What does it matter how many refugees are like trying to pour out of Syria right now if we don't stop the TPPA?
Yep.
And so I just feel it's just like most things in the news, anything to do with race, sex, religion, or politics, or whatever, just gets everybody's goat up, and you know, it just distracts them really nicely. It's like, oh, look, our celebrities freaking around, bae. Oh my god. Don't worry about the TPPA and the corporate enslavement of your entire people for every subsequent generation the next year, but you need to be concerned about premarital sex, bro. Yep, totally. You need to be concerned about somebody who's not allowing a gay marriage certificate to come through or something like that. No, this is the most important thing, all right? Stopping global corporate fascism, not that important. I mean, we'll put something on the eighth page or something. All right, that's how important it is. The prioritization, I think, of these issues is quite interesting to me. But when it comes to issues of race, everybody suddenly gets really sensitive about it. All right, but it cuts deep with people, like money and education, and there's two types of reactions that I see with this, and there's the Billy T. James type reaction, which is the jovial and self-deprecating humor type reaction, and then there's the militant black guy motif, which is just accusing everybody of being racist and things. And I think both come from the same instance, from having people be racist against you. And sometimes, if you can get in with the joke, it disempowers all the racism. But if you get angry, then all you do is you wind up becoming like a lightning rod for racists, because they hate you, you hate them, and it just causes this whole big stoush and hate, and it's just nobody listens to each other, nobody cares about each other, and nobody realizes that we're a human race. And a bicker and argue about which pigment or which genetic design, hair color, etc., is better or more important belies the fact that we are all human beings. We all bleed red. But that doesn't mean that we're all meant to live together. I've seen some very interesting things in my time. And what I found is that people naturally clustered together in their own racial groups and things of that nature. And that when other racial groups come into areas, other different cultures, and they don't assimilate and they actually create outposts of their culture, the culture that was there beforehand kind of gets eradicated, right? It sort of disappears over time, because it seems to me that colonization is still alive and well, and the elite is still controlling it. But at this point, I believe what is being done specifically and geopolitically in order to get people fighting with each other to not realize our global corporate banking masters is to cacophonously put up these barriers to make us forget our togetherness, to make us forget who the real enemy is, to make us fight with each other so long and so hard that we're so tired of fighting we can't even defend ourselves when the time comes.
Separation. There's a lot of separation going on, and we've got to have a look at, believe it or not, I mean, I'm a baby boomer, and the baby boomers have got a lot to answer for. They've had their cake and eat it, particularly in New Zealand. I mean, the baby boomers had to go through the trauma of being drafted off to Vietnam. We didn't have that here in New Zealand. New Zealand had all volunteers go to Vietnam. But what it comes down to is that there's not enough love in a family. So many children are born into the world and they are betrayed, abused, and abandoned. I worked in the maximum security prison here for 15 months about 8 years ago, and I went into all the different blocks. And deep block, you heard of it, Vinnie. And I spent some time with all sorts of murderers and God knows what else. And essentially, so many of them, not all, so many of them had been in a situation now, born to a mother, and the mother didn't even know who the father was of that child. And so she didn't really want to know who that baby was. And so that baby was shunned right from the word go. And then that baby might have been in a situation, say a little 3 or 4 year old little girl, and some drugged out uncle or pissed, you know, boozed up uncle comes along and he starts physically abusing her. Well, this goes on. And so the children, in many cases, that have come from single homes, and in New Zealand, there's a lot of women struggling to bring up children because where are the males? Where are the men? They've done a runner. They've run away from their responsibility.
Well, and also so the family court 91% of the time rules in solo custody for the mother. But yes, go ahead.
Yep, I do agree with that. But the father also could make sure that he could find a way that to give some assistance to that child. And what we're having at the moment is we've had a breakup of the family unit. I remember, Vinnie, that we used to sit at the table with my parents and we used to talk and discuss things, and we used to have a thing called animal, vegetable, mineral. We would think of something and then everybody would have to guess what that is. And you'd start off as an animal, as a vegetable, as a mineral. If it was animal, okay, then we had to go through the animal species until we got it. And but the family were there together, whereas, and America will be having this exact same problem, is that the fragmentation of the family unit. Now, the family unit of you know, a husband and wife and three kids and a dog or whatever it is not the ideal. Where Indigenous peoples had extended family everywhere, but the whole thing is we have lost our connection to family and community. And I know in New Zealand what happens is that if you were a sort of had tendencies to want to be a crook, you would leave the countryside and you'd come up to Auckland City and you'd do a few little crooked deals up there, and then you find out that people get to know who you are. So what do? They go to Australia. And because Sydney
I thought the next stage was not go to Australia but get elected mayor, but go ahead.
And they go to Australia and they can hide in Sydney for quite some time because 4 million people are there, same in Brisbane. And so what happens is that they just scale up and they'll find themselves getting into a bigger city or a bigger country. providing they haven't been caught and had their passport taken away. But this is what happens, is that the, you know, these are the hoodlums, Vinny. These are just the bum dealers and guys there who rip people off. But what it is that they don't actually recognize or realize what they're doing, because they're just perpetuating a system of where there's a lack of trust. We need to get back to trust. And that's going to be the challenge of the future. First, recognizing that we are all responsible for every action. And it's interesting, because the first day that I started in working at a prison in Auckland here, I went in and I'd heard the news in the car as I went, and it said NASA had just proved one of Albert Einstein's theories on relativity as actually being correct. Excuse me. And so I thought, okay. I listened to it and I thought, it's too difficult. But I thought about it. I went in and I had to be introduced to all the prisoners. So we sat down and I said to the prisoners, guess what? My boss here has asked me to tell you a little story. The story I'm going to tell you is about Albert Einstein was proved right by NASA. And it basically goes like this. If you had the most powerful binoculars or telescope in the universe and you looked out into space, sometime between now and eternity, you'd see the back of your head. Or conversely, if you had the most powerful telescope in the world, and laser in the world, and fired it up above your head, between now and eternity, it would come up your feet and come up your spine. And one of the prisoners looked at me and said, do you mean to say what goes round comes round? And I said, yes, you got it. It's called the law of return. It's called the law of karma. It's you reap what you sow. And at that time, I saw one guy, and I looked at him, and his eyes virtually went over the back of his head, and I realized that he must have done something pretty bad. And I said, okay, right, so how do we deal with this? I said, from now on, from this moment on, get rid of revenge, get rid of hate, get rid of anything there that is a vile, shadowy, ugly thought. Start thinking good thoughts. Try aroha, try love, try goodwill, try thinking anything that is positive, that is going to benefit everybody. And there's a better chance that what will come around and give you a whack is going to be more benevolent than if you keep on living in a treadmill churning out hate and violence and anything else. So
I saw a post on Facebook today that said, have you ever looked at somebody and know that the wheel's still turning but the hamster is dead?
Well, I can assure you there's heaps of them. You'll see them in the malls. You'll see them in all the fast food outlets. You will see them with a red and white can of soda in their hand.
What's this? Well, it's a level 6 biotoxin that's got enough sugar in it to disguise the taste of the salt, which means it won't hydrate you, except when you finish drinking it, you'll want another one, bro. Oh, okay. How much is it? Well, it's more expensive than bottled water, and we own the bottled water companies too, bro. And we don't take the fluoride out either.
Well, I'll tell you, this is our American listeners will really like this. So listen up, my American kin. I was up in Hawaii in 2000, and there was going to be a convention. It was a Democrat convention. So I thought, okay, I'll see what the Democrats are going to be like. Democrats, I think they party better than the Republicans. And so I went there, got inside the door, paid my money, I went up to the bar. And I said, well, what do you got? He says, oh, I've got Miller, I've got, a couple of these other American brands, we don't have them down here. And, there's one there that was owned, I can't remember, holy gee.
I hate it when that happens.
I know, it's a darn nuisance. Anyway, they named me all these different beers. And then he came on about one particular beer, and you may be able to help me as I go through the story. And I said, oh, yeah, that beer, do you know who owns that beer? That beer is owned by a friend of Ronald Reagan, and they gave all the Contras all this money down in Honduras to go over and shoot and kill all the Sandinistas. And I said, what you're doing is that you're selling all this beer, and I went through all the different beer people, and they were all owned by Republicans. And I said, so what in the heck are you Democrats spending your money buying all this Republican-owned booze and having a party to get money to try and throw the Republicans out? They didn't get it. I ended up talking to the boss of it. And I said, you know, what are you doing? All these breweries are owned by Republicans and you're drinking their beer. And he says, oh, yeah, but I like that beer. I said, make up your mind. So it's important for us all to make sure that when we buy stuff that is coming from a benevolent place. And it's very hard now because everything's sort of interrelated. I mean, I buy an Apple computer. I originally bought an Apple IIe way back in about 1984 because I saw Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak in those days as rebels. I don't know what the story is today.
They're dead.
But anyway, Vinny, it was Joe Coors. It was Coors beer. Coors is a rabid right-winger. He'll use all his money to go against anybody.
Who would have thunk it, eh? A right-winger who drinks a lot of beer.
No, he brews all the beer and he sells it to the Democrats. Isn't it crazy?
Whenever anybody tells me something crazy, I instantly believe it. And as soon as anybody tells me something that makes sense, I'm instantly suspicious now. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's the nature of the beast. Everything's backwards. We talk peace and arm for war. We talk love, but we do everything behind our back or their back. Everything is the opposite. Everything. It is astonishing.
Yeah. In fact, that's quite a good point to raise with people about how everything is more or less the opposite. I recall one time when I was a bit younger and I could afford to drink at a bar, I ran into these guys and I told one of these guys this and said, everything that you believe is more or less the opposite, all right? I wasn't able to explain it to him because, first of all, I didn't know what his beliefs were. And that's another thing. We've all got different beliefs, but they're all the opposite of what we think they are. That's the irony, isn't it? And
what's this guy? There's a guy Hedges. His surname is Hedges. He says that the Justice Department corrupts the law. The Education Department dumbs the people down. The Health Department or Department of Health, this is in America, basically makes us ill. And the politicians, they corrupt the law again. Everything is the opposite. It's just one hell of a mess. We have become so polarized, we don't know right from wrong or truth from lies. Anyway,
the quote there is, we now live in a nation where doctors destroy health, lawyers destroy justice, universities destroy knowledge, governments destroy freedom, the press destroys information, religion destroys morals, and our banks destroy the economy.
Hedges, what's his Christian name?
Chris.
Chris Hedges. Boy, what an insight. I mean, holy heck. That needs to be actually tattooed up on Times Square.
Now, you know, actually, it would be good if they had a plaque just outside Parliament, you know.
Congress. Congress and the Senate. Yeah, I agree. Now, look, can I get on to Vladimir Putin?
Well, it depends. You only get out what you put in.
Okay, well, you see, it's quite interesting how Putin has been demonized, totally demonized by the Western press. And I find it quite fascinating because the Australian, ex-Australian Prime Minister, Malcolm Fraser, came out in a British Guardian piece about January, I think, of this year, where he maintained that Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan had made an agreement where Gorbachev would pull down the wall, set free all the satellite Eastern European countries, and Reagan would not allow NATO to take one more step closer to Russia, not one foot closer to Russia. And that was the agreement. It was based sort of on words. They didn't write it up. It was because, for some unknown reason, Gorbachev and Reagan actually got on quite well. And Gorbachev thought, okay, well, let's trust him. Well, things changed. When Bill Clinton, the Democrat, got into power, all these Pershing missiles and God knows what else were moved into Poland, into the Czech Republic, and NATO started to sweep right up to Russia. And this is the biggest problem at the moment, is that the West broke the agreement with Russia because they want to freeze Russia out because Russia has got so much in the way of resources. Now, an interesting thing is that Jack Matlock, he was the American ambassador to the Soviet Union. I met him in Moscow in 1986, not once, but twice, during glasnost and perestroika that Gorbachev was doing to open up the Soviet society. In the last 5 months, he went to the press club in Washington, and he said to Obama and the current neocon administration, I think that's the way to put it, that you are screwing up, you are the ones that are wrong, you are breaking the agreement that was with Gorbachev, and you are going to cause a war, a third world war, if you don't hold it. And then finally, Paul Craig Roberts, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Ronald Reagan when he was president, who also happened to be, the associate editor for the Wall Street Journal, CraigPaulRoberts.com. CraigPaulRoberts.com.
It's actually PaulCraigRoberts.com.
Thank you. I'm getting dizzy. Thank you for that. PaulCraigRoberts.com.
I've been on nearly 2 hours of radio, man. You only normally do a one-hour show, eh?
That's right. I'm holding grimly to myself.
Oh, man, now, I get exhausted after so much radio. And I think, actually, the listeners don't get this, that talking and thinking for hours on end is actually really quite exhausting.
Most definitely. I taught up in China and at a school there. And the school started at 7:30 and they finished at about 4:30. So it was a very long day. But getting back to Paul Craig Roberts, he too states there that the present administration are full of lies. He said the Wolfowitz doctrine and everything in relationship to it, we are heading for a major catastrophe in the Ukraine, and it's all NATO, it's the puppet masters that are running the show. And the fact that he said that if Russia has to retaliate to NATO, they're going to wipe all of Europe away. I mean, you'd think that the Europeans would think, gee, we've got to stop this. We've got to take our countries back. But the Europeans and the greater state of, Europe, this combined mess that they've got, the Europeans have got to wake up very fast, because the whole Maidan revolution and what happened in Ukraine, and you've had it all. It was a gigantic setup, lots of money spent by CIA and etc. to put Russia in a bad light. So I'm just wanting to say one thing. Now, there's a Professor Alan C. Lynch from Virginia University, and he wrote a book called Vladimir Putin and Russian Statecraft, and that was in 2011. And he said the abortive communist coup by the old hands at the KGB in August 1991 was that Putin by that time had resigned his position in the KGB and was actually serving as the deputy mayor of the pro-American Leningrad mayor Anatoly Sobchak, one of the fiercest critics of the KGB and the old Soviet system. Well, it was Putin who organized the local Leningrad militia to oppose the attempted KGB coup and protect Mayor Sobchak and the forces of democratic reform. I've only got another 1 minute. Putin got word that took decisive and preemptive action and organized a handful of loyal troops and met Sobchak at the airport, driving the car with his troops right up to the plane's exit ramp, because the KGB were going to get that mayor, and that would have been able to allow them to take over Leningrad. And if they had taken over Leningrad, then the old Soviet Union would basically come back into being. However, the KGB turned back, not wishing to risk an open confrontation with Sobchak's armed entourage led by Putin. And so this signal failure in Russia's second city doomed the attempted KGB coup and assured the final collapse of the Soviet system and eventual transition of Russia away from communism. And you will never, ever get that coming from the mouthpieces of the New York Times, of CNN and Fox News. Murdoch's horrible, horrible spouter of you know what. So anyway, I wanted to share that.
Well, I think that there is a big conflict going here, but I think that the first casualty of war is the truth. Always has been, always will be. And so when you have one group of propaganda... Oh my goodness. Welcome back. I must sincerely apologize, ladies and gentlemen. There is some very bad technical glitches. It's either American Freedom Radio cutting out or it's me. It's been a really, really weird week. Now, you know, the studio's internet cutting out, my internet cutting out. I don't understand how this happens, but I suspect some scumbaggery involvement. But anyway, I've wound up thinking about this the Syria crisis and the refugees coming out of it and the refugees going into into Europe, right? And I was like, so let me get this straight. NATO bombs Syria, the Syrian refugees come into Europe and they're not happy about it. So I've got a remarkable solution for this. How about don't fucking bomb people and turn them into refugees if you don't like refugees coming to your country, bro? I mean, have I missed something here? Is it not a cause and effect world? Is there not such a thing as reactions? I mean, come on. What? The stupidity of it. And you see all these memes and everything, like, it's basically people are coming into it from all angles. They're like, oh, I don't like the Muslims, they threaten my Christianity. Or, oh, I don't like those black people, they threaten my white neighborhood. When was the last time millions of Christians were allowed to go into the Middle East? And they go, well, it was called the Crusades, bro. It's just frickin' stupid.
Well, I agree with you. I maintain that all these Arab Spring revolutions were just part of this whole thing that has been going on for quite some time, is to essentially take over. Now, Wesley Clark, he hit the nail on the head way back. He said, well, they're going to take out all these countries, Libya and Syria, and then on to Iran. Well, the Arab Springs are the ones. They've caused it, and that's a whole, you know, they've been usurped. So I don't know what to do there, but all I can do is agree with Europe completely. We Europeans have gone into the Middle East, and we should never have gone there. And it was all to do with oil and strategic interests.
Well, I mean, look at that. What was his name? We got some very bad feedback coming in there, Tim. Maybe you can turn your speakers down a little bit there, bro. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. In fact, frack, we're coming to the end of the freaking show, aren't we? Well, anyway, it was quite a nice conversation here, Tim. Thank you very much for coming on. And ladies and gentlemen, you can go and check out more of Tim's work at Green Planet FM. And
.com
now. All right, excellent. It doesn't have like a .New Zealand, .WordPress, .co, .nz.
No. The story was somebody in America, for some unknown reason, didn't get it. So I got greenplanetfm.com. And so I think I'm very, very, very fortunate.
I think you are, especially because we're living in New Zealand and we don't have to deal with depleted uranium fallout in our backyard like they have to do in the Middle Effing East.
Fukushima.
Yeah.
Peace, America.
Well, thanks to the supply routes. But thanks to the global supply chain and the fact that New Zealand stopped testing radiation in the seawater about 6 months after the Fukushima thing happened. And because we don't test any of our imports for radiation, don't worry, Tim, you're not being left out, son. Ladies and gentlemen, check out the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. It's the lighter side of genocide.